Hi, everyone. I'm Jamie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jamie.
I've been a compulsive overeater as far back as I can remember. I remember being 5 years old, and my father would say, "How about we go out for a treat? We go out for some fast food." And it was a treat, and my eyes would light up, and it was nirvana. And back then, fast food was still novel. Yes, it was that far. And so it was special, and the whole concept of treat emerged. I also remember when I was little, our family would gather around the TV and watch the Carol Burnett Show. And I'm sorry, I'm going to reference food here, but I think it's an important part of the journey. And my father would bring out chips, potato chips, and then he would bring out pop if it was a really special occasion. And so that was also, what could be better than TV and chips and pop all together, watching Carol Burnett. And my dad, oddly enough, I mean, both my parents worked, but my dad, who worked like a dog, also did the grocery shopping. And he would come home with treats. There would be sheets of baked goods. There would be those monster cereals, you know, with the little sugary marshmallows in them. And I would eat just about everything. My dad, to this day, said, "Well, Jamie would always leave just one." And so, and that's true. He would buy me all this stuff, and then I'd be scolded for pigging out. But my dad equated food with love. He grew up in extreme scarcity. His father committed suicide when he was, just 5 years old. My dad had to go out to work in the Great Depression at grade 9. And then he earned his grade 12 and his graduate degrees later on. And it was hard. It was a hard life. So for him, these were special things. And I grew up in a town called Winnipeg, also known as Winterpeg. It's a very cold climate, and in winters it can dip down really as far as 40 below, sometimes worse. That didn't stop me, and I remember trudging over the icy streets several blocks to go to the pharmacy or the convenience store to load up on a candy bar or something. And then I became quite mobile. I would take the bus at the age of 11 years old, and it would be fun taking it downtown. And I would go to the department stores we had there, the Bay or Eaton's, and I'd buy myself a little Lego toy, or I'd always get some candy. And what was better is it was candy on steroids, because now they had the bulk bins at the department store, and they had these chocolate seconds, and I could buy a whole pound of them for next to nothing. So the signs were there, and I would come home with my bags of seconds. And I remember being truly sad when the department store stopped carrying bulk candy. And, you know, as a child, I could eat whatever I want. When I was in grade 10, I went to a private school, and it was 1 mile outside of a little tiny town called Outlook. And if that name implies how diminutive it is, it really was. And we had a curfew. We were not allowed to go into town on school nights. I remember one night it was 40 below, and I had the cravings. And so I trudged across a mile of snow through the fields, snuck out into town, and the air was so cold, it was so cold I could feel the moisture in my nostrils crystallize. So I came back with a pound of stale candy and ate it. Wasn't very satisfied, but I got my sugar fix and I was less bored. By college, two new things came on the scene. The arrival of VHS tapes, which were great for rentals, and bulk groceries, which meant bulk candy. And so I was enamored with the return of bulk candy. I could just go buy all kinds of little bags of things and come home and watch a VHS tape and totally check out. When I got older, I was able to do more travel, and I found that the best way to enjoy culture was to ingest its food. I remember my husband and I, we went to Italy, and we were in Florence, and I was quite insistent that we get some gelato. Now, my husband struggles with food, and it wasn't helpful to him, but I had to have that gelato. We even did therapy over it. so, But it just that one example just exemplified how I had to have the food. Thank you. And even at the cost of others. As I got older, I got fatter. My discomfort increased. My waistline increased. My weight went up. My libido went down, and my connection with my body decreased. I really was repelled by looking at myself in the mirror. I would seldom want to make eye contact in the mirror. And if I looked at myself, which I rarely did, it would always be with a feeling of great shame. And this lack of connection with my body, I felt less connection with others, increased isolation, and it led to a lot of discontent. And so one day I thought, oh, wouldn't it be neat to move to Australia? And yeah. For those of you who've played geography, you know what I'm talking about. And so I talked my poor partner into going, and we went there with our dog, who had to stay a month in quarantine. But she adapted. She came back with an Australian bark. And I thought I was avoiding life. I would be going on this grand adventure, but oh no, life hit me head on. It was really hard to find work. It was stressful. The new culture was baffling. You wouldn't think so. We spoke the same language, sort of. But it was really tough. And in my despair, I found a store called USA Foods. And so I didn't have a car at the time. I was too nervous to drive on the left. And I would get on my bike, and I would ride over to USA Foods and fill my backpack up with all manner of U.S. groceries at triple the price you would pay here. So it was a way of getting comfort and feeling of home. It was like a little grocery consulate, if you will. But I also enjoyed the Australian sweets as well. They were even better by an order of magnitude. But I was miserable, and after 1 year, I was begging my spouse to go back. But my spouse's career, ironically, took off. He had no trouble getting a job, and he liked it there. And so what initially was going to be a 2-year plan, and I didn't plan it this way, you guys, but I did the math. It worked out to 7 years, 7 months, 7 days. Yet, through it all, I made some wonderful friends. I had some good adventures. And I returned, we returned, with one new family member, our adopted son. So even through my addiction, my higher power worked through me and helped me, and helped us become the first gay couple in the state of Victoria, Australia, to adopt. And that process took 4 years and lots of money. And at one point, I remember there were 7 lawyers in the courtroom. So we came back to California in 2011, and I had a bit of reverse culture shock. My son lost his cute Australian accent within months. But my career got back on track, and I felt happier. But my weight was at a record. I had palpitations, high blood pressure. The blood fat, also known as triglycerides, were 4 times normal. I would get winded going up the stairs, just walking up the stairs. My knees hurt. But thankfully, my partner introduced me to another 12-step program. I wasn't quite ready for OA. And I liked it, and I found success in it. And that encouraged me to face my biggest demon. And I swear to God, as I'm sure many of you can relate, food was my biggest demon. I was scared shitless. I didn't know how to begin to face it. So I just showed up, and I started sharing. And then as other people shared, I realized that they had the same neuroses that I did. And I knew I was in the right place. So I got a sponsor. I had the initial honeymoon. And then reality set in, and there was repeated relapse. Did recovery come quickly? No. It came slowly. And I remember talking to someone about this. She says, well, it's like learning to ride a bike. Said, you get on that bike, you're riding that two-wheeler, and you're going to make some falls, you're going to hit things, you're going to scrape your knees, but eventually you learn to ride it. And for me, that analogy was really helpful. I just wasn't one of those people, and I respect people who can do this, but I wasn't one of those people who could count days. Some people need to draw a line and say, I'm abstinent from this day, and it worked for them. But for me, I freak out. So I just kept getting back on that bike. And I kept working the program. And so my binging decreased by degree and frequency. In fact, my binges became more like slips. Junk food now tastes like crap. It's not real food. And for those rare times that I do binge, it feels kind of, I get that icky feeling. It's like having sex with an ex. And I just don't want to go there. Oh my God, you wake up in the morning with a headache. What did I do? But, you know, my stomach capacity was reduced. I just didn't have that much room. And now I would just feel the fullness. And it would be like, oh, I've got to digest all this food. And at that point, I could almost realize the panic that sets in for people who purge. I didn't have the urge to purge, but I could understand at that point because I'd be like, oh my God. But that has helped. And now I can tell you that I don't need medication for triglycerides. They're normal. And, you know, my knees don't hurt. I can run up the stairs and not be... Am I abstinent? Frequently. You know, and to be honest with you, whereas before I was like an alcoholic, constantly on a bender, now I'd say I'm someone who takes a shot now and then. And I'm working on that. I'm still not fully recovered, but I'm not giving up. And I'm hoping that this story of imperfection will inspire you. So the benefits. Well, my spouse had a beautiful phrase one time when he shared, and he talked about the subtle shifts. And the subtle shifts that have taken place in my life. And instead of avoiding emotions, I habitually face them and deal with them. And I have tools to deal with my fears and resentments. And this awareness of fear, worry, anxiety, I know that they affect me every day, but I'm more likely to write it out than to reach. I can see through most of my self-deceptions around food and call my own bullshit. I'm not perfect, but it's a lot better. I'm not peaceful, but I'm more peaceful. I can speak a common language with my spouse, that is the 12-step language, the language of recovery, and we can use it to help guide our son. I even have less patience for TV fiction binges. I'd rather just be here. So all these subtle shifts have come slowly. I know they say don't quit before the miracle, and I do believe that, but I say keep at it. You may not notice the subtle shifts day to day, but these two are miracles. So it's been slow and steady wins the race, and grace, the grace of a higher power. And I got to tell you, an interesting side benefit of this is I no longer have this Piscean age concept of a higher power as some lofty, separate being that needs my devotion. For me, and I respect people who do find that that works, I'm just saying for me, my high power is, I feel closer to it, and when I don't perceive it as something separate from myself. And this has really helped me with my recovery. I'd say it's become transformational. And I believe that we are connected to and a part of God, a part of God, and that it isn't separate. And it's that connectedness that has replaced the devotional concept that I had of a higher power with a functional higher power. And for me, that's one that I can partner with instead of worship. It's much more effective for me. It's a higher power I experience through your smiles, our phone calls, and this fellowship, and the love and acceptance of others.